Yep.
Recording
There we go. So, Phil, meet Kimball, and I'm Jeffrey. And so, yeah, we're just going to have a few questions and a discussion about the iodine. So, I'm sure Kimball's got lots of questions for you that I couldn't answer. So, yeah, fire away, Kimball.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. The understanding I'd like to be able to get some clarity around today with you is the different, how would you say, mechanisms of action or energetic qualities around the iodine product that you've created in comparison to the other iodines that are on the market. So the ones that I'm familiar with is just straight up iodine or potassium iodide, ammonium iodide, and nascent iodine. So if you're able to sort of create, give me some clarity around how you would describe the difference, and then with your own product, how that's created and how that's integrated into the body in a different way.
Well, my work's based on the Edgar Cayce readings, and Cayce talked extensively about this, during the course of this, 14,000 documented readings, and there's about 4,400 mentions of atomic iodine in the readings. So, it's the cornerstone to the whole philosophy that he presented, and hardly anybody understood what he was talking about then or even now, because iodine's a halogen, and in the periodic chart there's iodine, bromine, chlorine, and fluorine, right? So even though it's at the very bottom, which is the least caustic of the four, it still has a rough edge to it. And the medical community kind of experimented with it a lot, back 100 years ago, but because of the rough edge, they couldn't really control what the outcome was going to be. So, Cayce was given readings to the guy that actually introduced the concept to the US over 100 years ago. And this guy was an, I don't know, you have time for the story?
Yeah,
For
sure.
sure.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. this guy's, he was an Indian. Shankar Bisi was his name. And he was, this was back, going back to his adolescence, back about maybe 1900 or something like that. Well, before that, even. The British were trying to figure out whether the Indian culture was capable of doing math and science, because they honestly didn't know. It's kind of hard, when you but you have to put yourself back, like 100 and maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that's the way the British were. They were kind of like a little stuffy, and so anyway, they sent a crew down there to try and figure out whether the Indians could solve some complicated mechanical and engineering questions. And Shankar actually came from a pretty good family, and he was educated, so he, out of all the people that they quizzed, he was the guy who actually solved the problem. And so they offered him a stint at university in England, and he accepted. And he got on a boat and by the time he got to England, he didn't realize it at the time, but you know, he contracted malaria when he was still in India. And by the time he got to England, he was starting to show some pretty significant signs of the issue, you know. And the Brits, because he was the first Indian to come to, you know, England to actually study at the university, the Brits sent their best physicians to try and, you know, figure it out, but they couldn't. And after, you know, a period of time, he just ended up getting sicker and sicker until eventually he got it back on a boat and was going to go back home to die. And they stopped in France and across the channel, and somebody had heard about his situation, and the French actually were the ones that isolated iodine. It was Napoleon's chemist, but that's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. back about 1813, they isolated iodine. Anyway, they didn't know what to do with it. But, you know, it was available. So this guy went on the ship and he found Sankar and said, listen, I don't know if this is going to help you or not, but we've got this stuff. Iodine, the Latin word for it is a purple vapor, and that's what happened when they isolated it. They were trying to make gunpowder, actually, with seaweed out of the channel. And Sankar said, well, what the heck, I got nothing to lose. So he went on shore and found this physician where that he had some of this black goop. And he took some with him back on the boat. And by the time he got back to India, which, you know, in those days, that was several weeks, he had cured himself of malaria. And so he got all excited about it. And, you know, he made arrangements to go back to London. And he talked about it a lot to these people at university, but nobody really understood what he was talking about. Iodine at that point in time, and nobody had figured out what to do with it. They knew it was a powerful element, but they didn't know what to do with it. And he finished up his education. He actually got married, moved to New York, and set up his business, which was as a physician. And what he was doing was he was distributing iodine.
Was this the atomic iodine back then that you described today?
No, it was just raw in its natural state.
Okay.
That term, nascent, by the way, yeah. If you look that up in the dictionary, nascent means in its formative or original state.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
original.
That's actually a misnomer because, you know, what I'm working with is atomic iodine. And that's what Casey brought to the table. He heard from Sankar, and Sankar was desperate because there were some people that he was healing of these horrendous ailments and other people that were getting violently ill from taking too much iodine. So he didn't know what to do. He'd heard about Casey. He wrote to him. Casey wrote back and said, yeah, this is the answer, but you have to put it through this electrification process first. And he gave him some readings and explained how to do it. And Casey used to go to New York periodically too, so they met, and you know, he showed him on you know, the process, and that's what Sankar started doing. And during the course of the rest of his life, he healed tens of thousands of people of all kinds of ailments. I mean, you name it. And he passed on about 1935, and when he did, he left the business to his kid, but his kid had no interest in it, and sold it to a pharmaceutical company, and they put it on the shelf, and that was the end of it. Nobody ever heard about it again.
Right.
So I'm looking at these readings. I was actually studying other stuff in the Casey readings. I wasn't looking at iodine. I developed something called the wet cell, which was Casey's treatment for degenerative disorders. And
so iodine must have resurfaced medically as a topical antiseptic or something like that.
Yeah, you can use it topically or you can take it internally. Once you put it through this electrification process, then it transforms that raw state into what Casey referred to as the atomic state. And he said that in that form, then the body would be able to fully recognize and assimilate it.
Can you describe that again for me, please, Phil? So electrifying, did you say?
Yeah, there's an electrification process where you take a bottle of the iodine that's already reduced to like a 1% concentration. And you have a wet cell, which is a wet battery that has poles in it. And it's got a mild acid solution in there. And you suspend the iodine down in, it's in glass, and you suspend it down into the battery between the poles, and then you run electricity through the poles.
Okay.
And what that does is it generates a magnetic field around the iodine, and it transmutes it into the atomic state.
Right. Did you say it was a sodium bath?
It's an acid bath.
Oh, acid bath.
Yeah, it's copper sulfate, sulfuric acid, and zinc.
So that's conductive.
Oh, yeah. It's about 30.
So is that like changing the valence of the iodine molecule to make it more interested or bioavailable in interacting with other positive or negative molecules? Is that what do you think is the method of how that makes it more bioavailable or more compatible with our biology?
Well, it's still iodine, so it's still a very powerful vibration.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like you can just drink it out of the bottle, but, what happens, I don't know, but someday somebody will do some, scientific experiments and figure it out, but that isn't really my area.
Yeah, well, the main sort of medical category or theme obviously is involved in thyroid function, as iodine is used to make thyroid hormone. I've worked a lot with Hashimoto's, under and over active thyroid, Graves' disease. So there's a lot of the functional mechanics that we need to kind of navigate to help improve those cases where they've got issues in that particular area. And of course, iodine is at the fundamental core of all of those aspects one way or another. And treatment of different versions, more so the underactive type of thyroid with some form of iodine is relevant. And sometimes there's kind of counterintuitive discoveries in the lab tests. I have one in particular where even though she's had a history of Hashimoto's, we've improved that to just a general underactive thyroid, so her T4 can be a bit low, having quite elevated reverse T3, which I recognize as a stress marker for thyroid function and can kind of have a blocking effect on the production of thyroid hormone. But interesting in saying this recent case, her iodine level in the blood was actually quite high. And so we're trying to decipher what that might indicate. And I'm wondering whether your type of iodine means that it would be absorbed or utilized more readily, and the iodine that she has been taking is not actually being absorbed, it's just circulating around in the body. Do you have any experience around cases of that nature?
I've been doing this for quite a while. I started doing this in, I started looking at it before I left the beach was, like 98, 99. I started looking at it. And I was experimenting with the stuff that they were selling, which they claimed was casein, but it wasn't. It was just iodine and iodine trichloride, actually, which was turns out to be a pretty deadly poison. So the place in Virginia Beach where the Casey Institute was, they had a giant health food store there, and the health food store put out iodine trichloride, and they poisoned tens of thousands of people. And not only did it sort of like affect negatively the membership, which was interested in trying this stuff, because they called it etomidine, which was the name that it picked up. And they had a they had the rights to use that name, so it actually shut down the Casey readings pretty much as a whole, because when you go back to it, thyroid function is sort of the cornerstone to the whole philosophy that Casey presented.
Right.
And that's why he talked about this so much. But if you're putting iodine trichloride, which is one iodine with three chlorine, in your body, you're actually shutting the thyroids down and you're poisoning yourself. And that's that I sort of was up against the city hall there because they didn't want to change, and I was trying to explain to them what the problem was. And this was early on. I mean, I didn't really know that much about it, but they didn't want to change because they were selling 100 bottles of this stuff a month, and to the guy that owned the store, this was money, and he didn't care whether people were getting sick or not. So it ruined the Casey readings, and to this day, the Casey readings have never recovered. Anyway, that was 25 years, 26 years ago that I left the beach, and I've been experimenting with it ever since.
One thing I've noticed, Phil, is having taken it myself for 15 odd years or more, and selling it for just as long, is what I feel that happens is because of the charge that is in it makes it bioavailable to the cell, so it can recognize it and utilize it much better than it would normally use normal iodine. So it's just literally that charge which is changing the molecular structure of the iodine so that the body can use it more readily. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah. In order to you know, be able to take it on a regular basis, you know, you're going to have to detoxify it, you know. And, you know, these elements are very powerful.
And that wet cell acid bath, the char electrification process, does that, apart from making it more bioavailable, does that kind of detoxify or cleanse or have any other effect on the iodine substance, or is it just making it more compatible?
No, it just, you know, it changes the structure.
It does, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that the body can recognize it.
And is that that same process there you use for the iodine, is that also the same one that's used for the neutralizing solution? Is that a related process?
No, it's different company.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And Phil, I just get the iodine off Phil. All the milk or two products are completely different.
Oh, I see. All right, my apologies. Yeah.
But what I've found, I mean, when I first started using the iodine, or actually even before that, after I started using the iodine, I got married to a lady who had her thyroid had been removed. So she didn't have a thyroid, and so they were always trying to get her T cells correct, which could never happen.
Right.
And I got her on the detoxified iodine, and that managed to balance out her T cells much closer to normality. You know, which she was very happy about, and the doctors didn't really understand why, you know, her T cells were getting better.
Yeah, I wonder how that was getting converted into thyroid hormone without the thyroid.
No idea, but from what I understand, she still had her parathyroid.
Ah, yep.
So, you know, whether that was still using it that way, or I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's more related to calcium metabolism, but that's a very interesting case.
Well, now, one of the secrets that the medical community does not divulge is that when they remove the thyroids, it's not uncommon for a doctor to leave part of it in there because they know that once you start, you know, with whatever, you know, like desiccated thyroid, for instance, from beef, which is the rage now. That's what everybody's doing. It has to bounce off of something. So the doctors that do these procedures, they will actually leave part of the thyroid in there. So it'll have something to bounce off of. And they don't tell the patients that, and they never make that, they never disclose this stuff publicly.
I see. But when you say they have it removed, there's still some residual tissue there that can resonate with supplements and iodine and things that may help stimulate or stem cell some kind of activity that can help that process.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, very interesting. Particularly in your partner's case, Jeff, if her parathyroid was still intact, then quite likely there would have been some original thyroid tissue in and around.
Possibly. That. I know she tried for many years before I met her to heal herself naturally with lots of different natural things, but it wasn't happening. And it got to the point where her thyroid, the growth that was on her thyroid had grown right down and into her chest and was literally suffocating her.
Wow.
So she had to get, you know, that whole lot removed. So how much they left in, you know, who knows? Mm. I know, she was tested by an alternative person, and he said, he said, you've still got your parathyroids there at least. So who knows whether, you know, whether the body was, whether the thyroxin that she was taking was able to utilize the iodine as well and help convert that into the correct T cells.
I don't underestimate how that could be quite possible. Yeah, for sure. Mm. Yep. Phil, have you tried this electrification process on other minerals at all?
No.
Hmm. It's almost like, so it's like if this kind of electrification or activation of a substance helps its make it more assimilable, more absorbable by the body, you'd imagine we'd get great benefits out of applying the same technology or method to lots of other supplemental things, magnesiums and zincs and other things that would be equally beneficial in lots of other ways. And then with that electrification process, sorry?
It might work with bromine. You know,
Right.
that's another halogen. Although and bromine is not all that caustic, you know. It's not going to kill you like chlorine or fluorine will.
So this is quite specific to the halogen group, you feel.
I would say so, the way it's set up in the readings, you know, it very specific. You know, there's a specific amount of electrical charge that happens, and you know, it's done for a certain amount of time with a certain, you know, chemical mix. And you know, Casey was very specific about this stuff. He mentioned it. He uses that term, Etomidine or detoxified iodine 4,400 times in the readings. This is not something that, you know, was like a minor attribute. You know, this is the basis of everything he's talking about.
So
And
the iodine trichloride, is that the more natural form, the this toxic form that you're saying that we're this process is
oh.
converting?
If you bond iodine and chlorine together, then it dissolves in water.
Right.
So the rationale was the guy that owned this giant health food store said, well, he was kind of a ding dong, you know, and he said, well, I don't want to take the time or spend the money on dissolving iodine in alcohol because alcohol is expensive and it takes time. So I'll just buy it in a form that we can just add water to it and then we'll sell it that way. And in the process, like I said, he ended up poisoning tens of thousands of people over the course of several decades and completely undermining the Casey readings to the point where nobody even knows who Edgar Casey is anymore.
Because he used the water soluble form, the chloride form.
Well, iodine and chlorine are both halogens, but chlorine is much more deadly than iodine. You know, if
How very interesting. And
you
is
want to
there.
use it as a chemical weapon, it's very
Right.
effective.
And do you have a sliding dosage scale, like depending on what you're treating between, say, thyroid conditions, cancer, general immune, autoimmune, like all the things that iodine might have some potential direct benefit for? Has there been any guideline around that sort of dosage plan, depending on what you're treating?
Well, cellular malignancy is something that's totally different, really. It's
Yeah.
I don't think about it the same way.
Okay.
and there's a lot of that going around too, but
Well,
iodine
I
is a
yeah.
stimulus, so you don't need to overstimulate the system. And that's the problem with it, really. It's like, how much do you need? You know, if your thyroids are down, you know, and for some people, you know, they can take raw iodine and, you know, it's helpful. But, you know, over here in the US, these doctors got onto this iodine thing and they started doing these loading tests where they were pumping iodine into people's systems and then trying to measure how much was, you know, being urinated out later on, and oh man, they messed up a lot of. these freaking doctors, they, you know, they can do anything they want.
Yeah.
It's
I'm just trying to
interesting.
decipher too, like, you know, because there's the detoxification, there's the cancer. Is there any direct mitochondria, or is it mostly through the thyroid in terms of cellular vitality? How much of the mechanism or role of iodine would you relate to, or have you been sort of researched over time?
Casey calls it the oil for the machinery of the glands. In other words,
Yeah.
a glandular system is like a machine, and the oil that lubricates the glandular system is iodine. So it's not actually limited to thyroids, it's just that thyroids are right at the center of the whole endocrine process. And, you know, people focus on the pineal and the pituitary, but the pineal and the pituitary only give commands. They don't actually assess what's going on with the body. The thyroids do.
From what I understand, it's the pituitary and pineal gland that actually control the thyroid and
Yeah, hypothyroid.
so how much iodine that uses, I don't know. But it's all part of
Well,
that whole system, isn't it?
it's symbiotic, you know. The thyroids are the sounding board. So when the information goes down, when the pineal and the pituitary are saying this is what we need to do, then the rest of the endocrine process is like, okay, this is what we're doing. And then the information comes back up again. And the rest of the body says, well, this is where we are now. The pineal and the pituitary don't actually read that. The thyroids read it. And without the thyroids, as you can see with your patients that have had their thyroids removed, the endocrine process is never stable.
That's correct. It's interesting, Kimball, that you brought up using this process and other minerals, you know, especially magnesium, because it was Dr. Gunderson that did a very similar thing with the magnesium. So he created a charged particle magnesium, which has a couple of different magnesiums in it, and then puts it through a particular process, which I can't divulge. Because I don't fully know it either. And so he calls it a charged particle, which also makes it into a ionic form and in a particular size that can be taken in by the cell immediately.
Yeah, this is actually
So.
the question I had in mind as well. What's the difference between, say, ionic iodine and this atomic iodine? How would we compare those?
Well, like I say, the term nascent is actually a misnomer,
Yeah.
and that was developed by somebody that I trained early on. And they were an engineer, and they wanted to separate. When they separated from me, they wanted to create a business, so they
So it's a
generate.
marketing term, is it, Phil?
Yeah, and it
Really?
worked, you know.
Ah,
A
so it's
guy
actually
sold
doesn't have any scientific sort of differentiation. It's just a
Nascent isn't really the right term. People call it organic. That's not a good term either. You don't want organic iodine.
right.
You know, they don't know what they're talking about, but that's okay because nobody, you know, you should see the amount of marketing that's going on online now with these different iodine, not just iodine, but with all these different products to treat the thyroids. It's nonstop over here because, you know, there are tens of millions of people that have serious thyroid dysfunction. Why? The thyroids, along with the reproductive glands, are the only two aspects of the body that are hypersensitive to radiation. So,
Yeah.
when you carry your cell phone in your pocket, you don't realize it, but you're getting a small dose of radiation. The largest selling drug in the history of drug manufacturing in the U.S. are these ED pills. They sell more than all other drugs combined. Why is it that there are tens of millions of men, and it's probably the same over there as well, that can't have an erection and they have to take pills in order to do it? It's because of the radiation. The same is true, actually, for the thyroids. It's just the thyroids, you know, it's like you don't need, you know, you're not going to be a... Actually, it's true, too, because without thyroid function, you're not going to have much of a sex life either. Mm. But yeah. People don't understand the connection there.
And it's my understanding that...
Is, ionic iodine, is that such a thing? Is that available? Has that been compared?
I'm not sure what that is.
Well, you know, we've had one of the products that I dispense here is ionic electrolyte. So it's what I believe is an electrolysis process when they're separating out sodium chloride in seawater for sea salts, and this ionic byproduct. Because of that process has made those minerals more bioavailable because they're not bound to, so it's not magnesium chloride or anything like
that. Iodine doesn't bond with salt. You have to add it to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a misnomer. Mm-hmm. Iodine only bonds with living things in the ocean, and salt is not a living thing. So in order to get it into the, you know, after Casey talked about this for a few years back in the 20s, the government sent out panel to try and figure out if there was a correlation between goiter and iodine deficiency, because they didn't know.
Yeah.
And when, after they studied it, they figured out that there was a direct correlation.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, this is back when the government was still working for us, which was 100 years ago. They said, well, we have to put iodine into the diet of the general public in order to keep it healthy and get rid of this goiter, you know. Mm. It was a pretty serious problem 100 years ago. And they added trace amounts to salt. The U.S. was the first country to actually do that. And everybody else decided, oh, that was a good idea, so they did it too. But the trace amounts are not enough to actually deal with this amount of radiation that we're being exposed to on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And it's causing all kinds of problems. The government said, well, you know, we've cured that, so let's move on to what's next. But and it did. It actually it wiped out, you know, there's no goiter anymore because of the iodized salt.
So iodine actually removes radiation out of the body as well. Is that correct?
Yeah.
From what I understand. The other thing I've noticed.
Radiation is a weird thing. You know, we can't pick it up on any of our senses, but it's there and it's deadly. So. The only thing we can do really is to protect ourselves. The thyroids and the reproductive glands are hypersensitive to radiation. So if you're carrying around your cell phone in your pocket all day, every day, after a few weeks, it starts to affect you, you know, on that level. After a few months, you know, it becomes a problem. After a few years, it'll shut down those systems, both the thyroids and the reproductive glands. It's a slow, steady dose of that radiation. And, you know, I'm getting it from the lights. I'm getting it from the cell tower out here. You know, they're beaming this stuff all over the place. You should, I don't know if it's like that down there or not, but
even the monitor we're looking at produces radiation. TV screens.
And you know, my wife says, "Oh, you know, I've got these issues. I got these problems." And you know, I said, "Honey, it's 5G." You know, everybody else was like freaking out about COVID and the vaccines and all this. Oh, the vaccines are killing everybody and all this stuff. In the meantime, they're putting cell towers up every mile, every square mile across the entire country. Nobody said anything about that.
Yeah, the fire is a very vulnerable gland because it's exposed here. It's close to the surface.
Hypersensitive to radiation.
Yeah, I've noticed that clinically. For those that have EMF sensitive.
Iodine's the only thing that will protect the thyroids. It's not selenium. It's not, you know, all magnesium or any of these other elements. It's iodine. Iodine's the only thing that's going to protect them.
Do you prefer oral administration or transdermal?
Both are good.
Yeah. No difference. They're equally beneficial.
If you take it topically, it's going to slow down the uptake to like maybe half an hour or an hour.
There's been guidelines around how long it takes to absorb. Do you follow that?
Yeah. You know, the skin test is a good test to see, you know, how the thyroids are doing. You put a couple of drops on the back of your hand. You watch and see how long the color stays there.
But you need real iodine to do that.
There's a lot of iodine products now that are popping up in the U.S. that, you know, they break down, they dissolve some iodine, and then they put a small concentration of it in glycerin.
Yeah.
Because glycerin is one of the carriers that they're working with. Because people are afraid to take alcohol. Well, you know, a drop or two of alcohol is not going to hurt you, really. But, you know, there's so much concern about alcohol.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that won't take it.
Do you have a guideline on that absorption rate with the topical test?
I put a couple of drops on the back of somebody's hand so they can see and watch it.
Yeah.
And I say, if it's you can still see color there after a couple of hours, one of two things, either the receptor sites are blocked or, which is actually quite common.
That's what I was about to say, Phil. That's the other thing I'm finding is, you know, when people are using the iodine and it's not working, I'm finding their receptor sites are blocked. So thyroid, which you can't uptake the thyroid, the iodine. That's where we've found really good success using the neutralizer gel or the neutralizer liquid topically, orally. Topically or orally, using the gel directly on the thyroid or taking it internally. And that seems to
unlock those receptors.
Yeah, it seems to clean out that thyroid as well as all cells in the body. It's not just the thyroid. So, and it's also another charged particle product, you know, uses one of Tesla's processes to charge it to a specific frequency.
So 2 hours is the window of time. If it absorbs any faster than 2 hours, you feel that means that there's sufficient iodine, no need to treat?
It varies a lot with the individual. And as with everything, you know, there's so many variables, it's really hard to sort of nail down. I just tell people, look, you know, how do you feel? How's your energy? How's your sleep patterns? How's your focus and concentration? That's the big one, actually, because if you can't focus and concentrate, your thyroids aren't working.
Very good. Don't think I have any more questions. Is there other things that you, any tips or guidelines or pearls that you'd like to share with us, Phil, that will just help add a little bit more, you know, sort of background context to this whole atomic iodine story. I'm just about to look at introducing it into my clinical prescriptive work, and if there's anything you think I should benefit from knowing, yeah, please let me know.
Well, I use a Eurocap, which is it's a hard plastic insert that fits in the neck of the bottle, and then it's got a hole in the middle. And if you turn it sideways and tap the side of the bottle, the drops come out. If you turn it upside down, it comes out too quickly because it's in alcohol. It's 1% iodine. It's 99% alcohol. So it's very thin, and you don't want to frighten people by doing too much. And a lot of people want to do it topically because they're afraid to do it internally. And whatever they want to do is fine. People will figure it out for themselves, ideally. Rather than tell them what to do or how to take it or how much or whatever.
Is there a general
My
baseline guideline that you find is a general average for most people as a starting point?
I can send you, Kimbo, I can send you the guideline that we use.
Okay, great.
And there's a specific procedure that we get people on to follow.
I tell people, look, put a half ounce of water in a shot glass or a glass or whatever. Put four or five drops in there. Use it as a rinse and a gargle for 10 to 15 seconds. Spit it out. You're going to get a couple of drops in the system every time you do that, right? And if you do that on a regular basis, it'll bring the thyroids back up over the course of maybe a week or two. You'll feel it because just about everybody's got low thyroid right now. They may not know it, but that's the reason why everybody's having problems, because if your endocrine system isn't balanced, it creates havoc in all different kinds of areas in the body.
No, I see that. Is it important to do the iodine separate from other supplements? Can you combine them at the same time?
Oh yeah, you can combine them with other stuff.
My first ritual in the morning is methylene blue, and that would be the perfect glass of water to do the iodine. So, you're saying to swirl it around in the mouth, does that help absorption before you swallow it down?
If you can kill the bacteria, or at least keep it under control down below the gum line, it's one of the healthiest things you can do for yourself. The teeth are the grand central station for the whole energy body. So what causes the problems with teeth? Why do we have to go to the dentist twice a year? It's bacteria. So rinse, gargle, spit it out. That's easy for people. They're not afraid to do that. There's a lot of fear consciousness around everything that goes on,
Bit
as
of a
I'm
waste to
sure you're.
spit it out, though, isn't it?
Well, 10, 15 seconds. So that way people feel like, oh, well, this is like, my mouthwash or whatever, which is basically what it is. And it'll kill the bacteria down below the gum line. And when that relationship between the gum and the enamel is normal, then the entire energy body of the system can function normally. It's a remarkable thing that, you can't explain this to people because most people have no idea what you're talking about. But the Chinese have been studying, the acupuncture meridian system for thousands of years.
Each tooth on a meridian.
Exactly, yep.
And they figure out where to put the needles based on the meridians in this in the body. Well, the body does have an energy system.
Yes, for sure.
But you know, you don't want to be messing around with needles unless you, you know, are Chinese.
Well, iodine, it certainly seems like an important ingredient in today's toxic EMF world. So I'm very interested to see how my clients respond. I'll be looking at it personally with my family. I know my sister has already been taking it for the last month or so, I think, perhaps, Jeff, maybe a bit longer. She's had thyroid adrenal issues for quite some time, and she's the one who encouraged me to reach out and connect with you. She had found that your iodine had a more profound effect on her energy, which is one of the big features of her sort of menopausal picture. So because I deal with a lot of clients in this area, I'm interested in all the other general health benefits as well, because obviously that's, you know, cellular vitality, metabolism, definitely nurture points within my client population that everyone needs help in that area. Did you have any other questions or tips to add into the picture, Jeff?
Well, like I say, you know, if somebody wants to test it, you can put a couple of drops on the back of their hand or maybe on the front of their hand or whatever, so they can monitor it for a while. Yeah. And, you know, for a lot of people, you know, the color starts disappearing right away because the body is, you know.
So if it absorbs in, say, half an hour and there's no stain visible, that means that they don't need to treat it with extra iodine at that time, would you say?
Iodine doesn't actually stay in the body, and the body doesn't create it. But it is one of four essential elements that is necessary for the body to function. So, yeah.
Can you run through those again? Because I know I have looked at them. The soda, iodine.
Yeah, water, salt, soda, and iodine. Mm. So it kind of harkens back to the, you know, the stuff that we learned in grade school about the hot soups, you know, and out in the middle of the ocean, you know, and the lightning struck and then life was created. I don't know if you got that stuff when you were a kid, but that's how science was trying to explain how life was created. And actually they weren't that far off. It's basically what happened. But, you know, then you got to get into a whole, like, you know, what's the metaphysical explanation that goes beyond just the physical. And you need those four things, according to Casey, in order to create, you know, whatever else the body needs.
Well, you got to understand. My next client just arriving. I just got that message. Anything else that we need to ask Phil while we've got him online, Jeff?
Not really. I mean, I know Phil's, you know, he's been run through the mill and run out of town before, so he can't say a lot of things. So, you know, we can appreciate that, but.
Well, yeah, but I'm
at that
age. I feel
we can say more.
I'm at that age where it's okay. You know, it's like if you want to talk about cellular malignancy sometime, you know, I'm up for that too. That's not to say that iodine can't be a factor. In fact, it is a factor because the glandular system needs to be balanced in order for the autoimmune system to kick in. Too many people get, the body gets so occupied with doing other things that it can't fight the, the malignant cells off because it's too busy doing other things. So if the glandular system is balanced and functioning, and you got to have functioning thyroids in order for that to happen. Then, then you're better suited to address cellular malignancy. So I didn't mean to, give you the impression that, you don't need iodine, because, it's important part, but, it's a stimulus, so you have to be careful not to overstimulate the system.
But there's no direct anti-cancer action of iodine specifically, though. It's just how it helps to support the endocrine system and immune.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm very excited to give it a good shot and see what sort of results we can create. So really appreciate your time, Phil. And Jeffrey, thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. I see you've got to head off to your next client. So.
Yeah, shortly. But if there's anything else that we need to wrap it up, we can do so.
There was one particular story I had from a customer who told me how she had a growth on the bone beside a thyroid. And she was meant to go into hospital to get an operation to get this growth removed. And her dog got really sick and she had to spend the money on fixing up her dog, so she didn't go. But in the meantime, she used the detoxified iodine topically on her thyroid.
Okay.
And also the neutralizer gel. And when she went back to the doctor to finally make the appointment and he did the test, he said, well, we can't operate on something that's not there anymore. So she cleaned that up with just those two products.
Yeah, right.
Darn.
They seem like a bit of a magical combo, the two together.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And that's when I was shown how the neutralizer gel cleans out those thyroid receptors.
Or
the neutralizer liquid, depending which one you're doing, but even just topically.
Yeah, no, I'd definitely be interested in looking at both those, mate, the topical and the oral version.
Mm.
So, I do a lot of cleansing protocols as well. But that might be a very useful receptor reset kind of
for sure
instruments to help these things work better. So,
for
yeah,
sure.
we'll talk further, mate. I'll follow up with you and come up with
one other thing. I did notice, Phil, that I stopped taking the iodine for quite a few months because I was using a lot of chaga mushrooms, which also has iodine in it. But I noticed a bit of decline over probably 6 months. So I got back onto the iodine, and sure enough, I picked up again. So I thought that was quite interesting. It's just a physical, reaction that I could see within myself, how better I felt.
How many drops do you take a day?
About that much. I never measure it. I literally just go, that's how much I need today, however much my body says.
Okay.
Sometimes it's 3 drops, sometimes it's 8 drops.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So,
if I've had a bad night, if I've had no sleeps through the night, I'll have the iodine and bing, I'll be wide awake again.
Right.
So it's definitely good if you haven't had much sleep.
And doesn't interfere with your sleep that night?
No, that's for you. You have to take it AM.
Yeah. All right. Very exciting. Look forward to seeing how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. And I'm glad I introduced you two and brought you two together and brought up a lot of good questions there.
Yeah. I appreciate both the time.
Yeah, thank you to both of you, and appreciate your time and letting me record this. I'll be able to send you through the recording and transcription.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Kimball.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
See you.
Dr. Kimball.